Okay, translation. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as if on a machine made of the material energy. Please repeat. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart.
The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart.
O Arjuna.
O Arjuna.
And is directing the wanderings. Of all living entities, who are seated as on a machine, made of the material energy. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Arjuna was not the supreme knower, and his decision to fight or not to fight was confined to his limited discretion. Lord Krishna instructed that the individual is not all in all. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, or He Himself, Krishna, as the localized Supersoul, sits in the heart, directing the living being. After changing bodies, the living entity forgets his past deeds, but the Supersoul, as a knower of the past, present and future, remains the witness of all his activities. You see, they're generally written in the masculine also, the scripture. It says his activities. Eh? The soul is neither man nor woman. But it says his. The women didn't usually object, because the women didn't usually study the scriptures. So don't mind. Therefore, all the activities of the living entities are directed by this super soul. The living entity gets what he deserves and is carried by the material body, which is created in the material energy under the direction of the super soul. As soon as a living entity is placed in a particular type of body, he has to work under the spell of that bodily situation. A person seated in a high-speed motor car goes faster than one seated in a slower car. Though the living entities, the drivers, may be the same. Similarly, by the order of the Supreme Soul, material nature fashions a particular type of body to a particular type of living entity, so that he may work according to his past desires. The living entity is not independent. One should not think himself independent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The individual is always under the Lord's control. Therefore, one's duty is to surrender. And that is the injunction of the next verse, which is, O scion of heart, surrender unto him utterly. By His grace you will attain transcendental peace and the supreme and eternal abode. It's worth it to surrender to Him. Translation again, the Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. We all devotees here, all been around at least a year, right? Most of us? Okay. So the basic, everyone knows basically what we're speaking of here. The first thing that Srila Prabhupada mentions is that Arjuna was not the supreme knower. And his decision to fight or not to fight was confined to his limited discretion. No, don't put it there. Don't put it there. I just want to return these things. The Maharaj's gratis.
Okay.
Transcendental vision ahead. for a little while. Now the divine eyes have gone, I'll be exposed. So this. Okay. So, Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, see, he's a citta, he's an eternal associate of Krishna. Very good friends. Huh? They used to eat together, sit together. They were such close friends. Of all the Pandavas, which Arjuna was the most closest to Lord Krishna. And he is a great pure devotee, there's no doubt. He's such a devotee. There's an incident. I can't quote where it's from. One day, Krishna left his bed, and Rukmini followed him because he used to do that regularly at nighttime in Dwarka. So sometimes Krishna would leave his bed at night, and so Rukmini was very curious as to where he was going. So one night she followed him. Can you hear me? At the back?
Yes.
If I speak too fast or too much with a Cockney accent, you can correct me. And Lord Krishna went to the bedroom of Arjuna. When Rukmini looked inside, she saw Krishna sitting at Arjuna's bed, and he was crying. And she came and she said, "What are you doing? What is going on? You know, what is happening?" Krishna said, "Lift up Arjuna's hair." So she left a strand of Arjuna's hair. She said, "He said, listen to it," and she heard Krishna, 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 Krishna. So he said, "How can I can't stay away from someone who loves me this much, and I cannot stay apart from them." Hanibal. We were just discussing how intimate Krishna and Arjuna were before we start. I can tell you the story later.
Please.
So Arjuna is obviously not in any kind of illusion. But still he's not the supreme knower of everything. So for the sake of us, conditioned souls, then Arjuna is placed into so-called illusion, like we are, so that he can speak and ask the questions on behalf of us and present us how we feel. Otherwise, anyway, that is the situation. So he's asking all the questions that we would ask, and even better questions than we would ask, and the answers are there for us. So this Bhagavad Gita is such a wonderful thing because it's answering all the timeless questions, and it's God Himself that is answering the questions, and also God Himself that has provoked the questions as a super soul within the heart. Of course, this is yoga maya, it's not maha maya. And we're under the influence of the internal energy, where Arjuna is under the influence of we're under the influence of the external energy, where Arjuna is under the influence of the internal energy. So he's acting as an ordinary conditioned soul, and therefore at the battlefield then his emotions get the better of him, his heart overtakes him, and now his intelligence is bewildered. If I fight, if I kill these people, what would be the result? Let's look at the long-term view of this battle. If we kill all these people, which I'm certain we can do because you're on our side, then we'll be so sad. They're our relatives. So even if we win, how can we enjoy? We shed the blood of our own relations to get his position. This is not very nice. So he's naturally soft-hearted, sadhu. Although he's a Kshatriya, internally he's very magnanimous and Vaishnava. So he says, better we don't fight. Better just let them take it and, you know, just for a little happiness in this world will cause so much distress and suffering for so many people. You know, what will happen to their wives? They'll become unprotected, there'll be unwanted population, the whole world will be put into ruination just because of, you know, we're proud Kshatriyas and we, just for the sake of a fight. He's talking a little bit like Yudhishthira. So he's bewildered because he doesn't know what will happen. He's thinking like this, but there's many different opinions. And he said, I've heard from Shastra. I've heard from the Parampara. He's quoting Parampara. He's quoting Parampara. He's quoting religion. He's quoting morality. He's quoting, you know, just a social well-being. All levels of arguments he's presenting. But he doesn't know which position to take. In this world, there's so many contradictions, and in the religion, there's so many contradictions, even in Dharma. Just like when Drupadi was insulted, and she was won by the lost to the Kauravas by the Pandavas, then she asked the question: how can you, if you've already lost me, how can you order me around? Tell me to come here and like this, when she was being insulted. Then she went to everyone and asked them, what is, you know, your country is just supposed to protect me, and it's a very complex question that she had. Can you give me away? You've already lost me, so can you order me around anymore? You've already lost me in the dice match. So she asked everyone, even Yudhishthira, who is the Dharmaraj. He couldn't answer a question. So she went to Bhishmadev. Bhishmadev's Mahajan. You know, it's as if there's any discrepancy in the scripture, you accept what the Mahajans say. That's decisive. She went to Bhishma Dev and she asked him, What is the Siddhanta? What is the truth? Bhishma Dev said, the ways of morality are very difficult to understand. She said, thanks a lot. Acharyas are saying that in this particular incident, that Bhishma, he knew that while Krishna was on this planet, nobody could touch a hair of Drupadi. It wasn't possible. It's not possible. He knew that. Therefore, he said, this must be Krishna's program. Otherwise, it's just not possible. So therefore, I don't know what Krishna's program is, so I'm staying quiet. So like that, we excused Bhishmadeva also.
May I just ask the question, is it better if you have we have a loudspeaker here to reach us?
It may be better, but I did ask and...
No need?
No, I asked this.
It may be better.
I have a loudspeaker here.
So because Arjuna is not all knowing, and therefore he's bewildered. So like us, we're not all knowing. We don't know the purpose of what our destiny will be, what the Lord's program is in the ordinary daily activities. We don't see the Lord's moving hand in all of the activities. But this is what we can learn. This is what we should be learning in Krishna consciousness. The Krishna consciousness means to be conscious of Krishna 24 hours a day. That is the secret. So we should learn how to act in such a way that we can always be remembering Krishna. We should learn how to think in such a way that we can always remember seeing Krishna. And this is the art we have. This is Krishna consciousness, and this is what we're learning: what is pleasing to Krishna, what is not pleasing to Krishna, how to see Krishna's hand in everything. So any incident that happens to us, good or bad. Generally we say if something good happens, that is Krishna's mercy. Mm-hmm. And if the reverse happens, we say that is also Krishna's mercy. Why is it Krishna's mercy? Because either we see it directly or indirectly. Either you see it as Krishna doing it, or you see it as Maya, as karma. That's Maya. In any case, it's the same thing, because Maya Devi is a pure devotee of Krishna, and she's acting on behalf of Krishna. That if these living entities they don't do what I say, then you give them this reaction and that reaction. So he's risen in the law, and then the devas they take over and enact the law. So in any way, directly or indirectly, it's all coming from Krishna. There should be no doubt about that. Of course, our acharyas, they always say, because of my karma, because I'm such a simple person, therefore, you know, I'm forced to suffer in this position. But out of humility, because actually at the time of initiation, most of your karma is taken away. And depends on your degree of surrender. Krishna says, those who surrender unto me, I take over. I take over their lives. What actually happens at the time of initiation is that your subtle body changes. Because that when you take initiation, that means you're very serious. That means your mind changes. I'm really determined to become spiritual. So your subtle body is changing. Your mind is changing like that. Then you become serious. That serious means that you know, if you don't accept the spiritual master, then you're serious. Because it means giving up what we call happiness in sense gratification like that. So your subtle body has changed at that time. Your gross body actually, you know, doesn't change. Your nature doesn't change. You still have the same likes and dislikes. It's not that after initiation that suddenly you don't like the things you used to like, or you like things that you didn't used to like. No, you're still the same person. You still have the same likes. Same tastes are there. You don't see anyone change drastically. We don't see that. So the nature starts to become purified, and then the rough edges gradually fall away, you know, and then we learn to behave in a more refined way. But the personality doesn't really change. You see, the person that comes in, he's very jovial. Like, he always stays like that. The person who's grave, he's always grave. But they don't change. People don't change. Their nature, personality doesn't change much. And it doesn't have to. Problem is, because we don't know, we think we have to be this person. You know, we've heard about what a spiritual person is like. You know, everyone has to be like Prahlad, Maharaj, or Drupadi, or whatever. So you should just be yourself. In Krishna consciousness, because Krishna consciousness is the most natural thing, must be. It's the most natural thing. So your conditional nature is there. We got this conditional nature, and it's always raising its head. That means conditioned soul. So we have to tolerate that, and we accept those things which are favorable, and we have to reject those things which are unfavorable for Krishna consciousness. This is called austerity or tapasya, but that is some sacrifice is necessary to advance in Krishna consciousness, because we don't, you know, we're acting now on what we like and what we don't like. In other words, we're just acting on the mental platform, because we explained this morning, I think, that the tasting is actually done in the mind. The feelings, emotions, are actually in the mind. So. Shall we speak backwards and forwards, or shall one speak and then the other conclude? Speak half half.
What is it?
It's 8.
I think it's good to come to a conclusion and then begin to answer questions.
So this is how we can see the. We can see the super soul of not visually, because we're not yogis, but how we can perceive the super soul in everyone's heart, because from that, Krishna says, from me, knowledge, intelligence, remembrance, forgetfulness come. So anything that we're able to do is we can remember Krishna, because Krishna says, I'm the ability in man. That means woman also. So anything we can do, it's only because Krishna's given that ability. He's given, intelligence is coming from him, remembrance is coming from him, forgetfulness is coming from him. So that means everything, doesn't it? If you can't remember the past, you won't know what to do now. So then Krishna reminds you, and also it makes you forget when if it's your karma. So he's the ability. So that's very esoteric. It's very esoteric. I thought it was the most esoteric thing in the Bhagavad Gita when I read that. I'm the ability in man. I'm the ability to do anything. That means you can't do anything. You're not who you think you are. Actually, without Krishna's sanctioning, you can't do anything. So that's very wonderful. So this is one. These are some of the hints we get how to understand the super soul is within the heart, and he's actually given the direction. But because we're not self-realized or Paramatma realized, then we get the instruction from the Bhagavad Gita, which is the same, and we get the instruction from the sadhu, which is not different, because they're not saying anything different from what the super soul says, what Krishna says. So the super soul is reminding; he's supplying the intelligence. But whatever you want, he's given like that. If it's material, also he'll give you the information. If you want to go to hell, he gives you the information how to go to hell. If you want to go to him, he'll give the information how to do it. He's not interfering with the independence. Hare Krishna.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Prasadine Nivashesha Shunyavadi Paskatyade Satarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna
Krishna
Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
On my first visit to the temple in Hamburg, I made a realization in Krishna consciousness where I feel that the Lord as the super soul was showing himself. I came into the Hamburg temple, and as I walked up the stairs I was overwhelmed by the smell of the unknown spices, and also by a feeling of nervosity, I think it's called, that because I did not know what to expect inside the temple. So I came up the stairs, and the first thing I noticed was something which maybe the mother of Govinda Nandan has also noticed: the unusual way in which the devotees greet themselves. They were bowing down on the floor. And I remember when I saw them doing this, I thought they had something had fallen out of their bee bags. It's maybe an important medicine or so. I was very very bewildered, actually. So then the devotees went to take prasadam. They left me in the reception room, thinking that I was not hungry. So I had time to think about everything. I was here in an
temple of Krishna consciousness, and the devotees were kind people, but I found them a little strange because of their way of greeting each other, bowing down. So I had come as a serious searcher and had asked for some information. Finally, a devotee had time to explain Krishna consciousness to me. I was sitting next to a cupboard, and the devotee said, "Well, Krishna consciousness means to be aware of God's presence everywhere." And he said to me, "God is present both in the atom and outside of the atom." And then his wife called him after having said so much, and I heard he disappeared somewhere, and then they were quarreling with each other. I also heard this. But this was not of interest for me. I was sitting next to this cupboard and thinking, wow, God is inside each atom. That means he is inside all the atoms of this cupboard and between the atoms. He is everywhere. So I remember I had this type of, you could say, innocent faith, which is born when one meets a devotee of Krishna and listens to his words. At that time, when you meet a real devotee of the Lord and listen to his words, faith is born in the heart. Or if you are not maybe a spiritual person, you object to it, and the opposite of faith, distrust is born. In my case, when I met the devotee and he explained to me what is the essence of Krishna consciousness according to his understanding, I had faith. God is everywhere, in every atom in between. So with this original faith, I remember I left the temple to go into to the train station, which is called in Hamburg Sternschanze, and took a train which brought me into a suburb of Hamburg, where my parents lived in their own house. So as I was riding in the train, I had this faith that God is everywhere, in every atom and in between every atom. And at this moment, something happened which is so sublime that it's very difficult for me to talk about it. Prahladananda Maharaj had a similar experience. And some of you know I'm very interested in interreligious studies, and I've studied some literature where those who start their spiritual life had also a similar experience, similar to the experience which I had in this train. Let me try to tell you the experience as good as I can. I remember sitting down, the train started, and there were many compartments, you know, always seats of four, here seats of four, then seats of four there, then seats of four there, you know, like this. You have seen this, like in a tram maybe in Zagreb, or underground in New York. There's also these little small compartments. So I was sitting there and thinking with deep faith, God is everywhere, in every atom in between. As I was thinking this, all of a sudden I saw the matter, you know, the wooden seed, change, become transparent with a golden light around themselves. I overheard the people who were in the other compartments talking with each other, but from my perception, the sound which reached my ears was divine sound. It was like divine music, like Vedic mantras. So, in other words, my whole perception began to melt away, the material perception. Instead, I had a spiritual perception, how God is everywhere and directs everywhere, the sounds, the people, how he is in the matter, and the matter rests on him like the pearls which are strung, not bright, but on a thread. And I remember feeling very, very ecstatic. I began to sing loudly the Hare Krishna mantra. I sang it false until a person came to me. It was a young hippie, put his hand on my shoulder and said, "Cool it, cool it. I know you have taken some something, but cool it, brother." He said, no, you don't understand. Yes. I understand. So, this was my first realization of the super soul. Unfortunately, I forgot about it, although it stayed always with me, until I met Srila Prabhupada in Paris. He was on his Europe tour and went from Paris to Amsterdam, and we followed him to Amsterdam. And one fine morning, I was invited by our temple president to come with Srila Prabhupada on a morning walk through the Wonder Park. And it was a wonderful scene. It was early morning, and Srila Prabhupada was walking very peacefully until we came to a tree where there was a nest. And in this nest was a little bird, maybe like this, who had come out of the egg maybe 2 weeks ago, or 1 week ago, I don't know so well his history. And he was now coming to the edge of the nest, and he was looking down. He was obviously thinking whether or not he should fly or not fly. He was a little afraid, like most of us would be afraid to jump from the 10-meter tower in the bathing. What is it called? The bathing?
Bungee.
that is for bold people like Bungee. No. When you go in the where you swim, the swimming pool.
Diving board,
thank you. He felt like all of us feel when we go to the diving board and we think it's just a little bit avant-gardistic, this high heights for me. I go to the 3-meter towers. This is my size. Anyway, so he was looking down, and I remember Prabhupada was there, and he lovingly encouraged him. Doiji, come. And finally the little bird was mustering all its courage and jumped, and then somehow managed to flutter down, and he landed, and he felt so proud. He was like, I made it. We all applauded softly to not frighten him. And then Prabhupada asked this question. Now, from where does he know how to fly? I've told this story a few times already. It is known that a flying operation takes many, many small steps. You know, the landing, the steering, and whatever is necessary. So Prabhupada asked, how does he know? And then one devotee said, instinct, Prabhupada, instinct. And Prabhupada, he said, this is a very foolish word. It's just explains something which is unexplainable. And he said, it's the super soul who's in the heart of all living entities, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam, and who is directing the ways of all. Now, as soon as I heard Prabhupada saying this, I remembered my initial experience in the train, where I had actually seen for a moment how the curtain of material illusion was removed, and how everything was under the control and guidance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because I had faith in the words of that devotee, Krishna was very kind to me and gave me actually a glimpse into the reality that everything and everyone moves under the control of Krishna. I personally am always overwhelmed by this. At the moment, I'm, as you all know, under the able care of Lalita Priya, our talented dentist, and I must say, physically, it is a very hard time for me because I'm abnormally sensitive, I would say, I was very hungry today, and I asked Gaurahari to cook something, and then in the midst of the eating, I was just trying to enjoy that finally I'm eating something, and the tooth fell out, and I lost all my appetite because of a very sensitive without the tooth, all this open wound. And I was just saying, Gaurahari, where's the painkiller, please? Please keep calm. I only need to know where is the pill which Madhavi brought today. And we found it, and then I thought if everything is under the control of the Lord, certainly the tooth has also fallen out under the control of the Lord. And certainly this means, because the Lord is always only wanting the best for each one of us, that there is something for me to learn from this at this moment. And I had two ideas which I wanted to share with you. As soon as Krishna came in the picture, I remembered some light came into my consciousness. The light which came into my consciousness was the light of Krishna conscious knowledge. Each one of us has a certain amount of suffering to bear in this world. Also, it is right, we as devotees don't have karma in that sense, but Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains what the devotee has, for what the devotee needs to suffer is offenses which he has done in the practice of devotional service. This is why we suffer as devotees. It is due to aparadas, offenses which either we have done or which others have done, and when we are responsible for them, then we are connected to this, to these reactions in some ways. So I felt actually at that moment great gratitude. I felt so happy that the tooth had fallen out, because now some little extra suffering was coming my way, but it would mean that soon this let me say, storage of suffering would come to the end, because the dental pain is a very harmless pain, relatively speaking. It's not something you die from. It is you go just like, that's all. It's not harmful to your body. It's a luxury pain, actually. But it is pain, and a lot of reactions for one's aparadas are going down. In other words, I'm very sure that after this dental experience, I will have a very good ability to concentrate on devotional service. This is one example of how the super soul is there controlling everything, even the tooth falling out or other things which happen in our lives. I really feel as soon as we as devotees think about how Krishna is present in our heart and how really nothing and no one can move without Krishna consciousness, our whole life changes. It's by the light of the super soul where our whole perception can change. I would request all of you now to turn 90 degrees to the back, or is it 180 degrees in the back. Do you see Krishna's eye looking on you? The beautiful moon? No? Yes? You can see? Gogadatta, you could see?
Behind the chimney.
It's behind the chimney. Yes? Bhakti Granthaji, you could see. Good. See, the night is dark, but the moment the moon comes, the night gets light. In the same way, we walk through darkness in our lives, but the moment we are ready and willing to accept that everything moves under the control of Krishna, that material darkness is actually blown away. It's very important for a devotee to have this basic understanding with which Lord Krishna gives here. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities. Krishna, in the super soul aspect, is also directing the wanderings not only of the living entities, but the workings of the material energy. In other words, nothing which happens to us is meaningless. Everything is under the direction of Krishna. Before Srila Prabhupada left the world, he actually said something very deep and profound. Srila Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, and he was lying on his lying down, and he was explaining or dictating the purpose of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then just a few pages before he stopped dictating, he said something which has really remained my motto in Krishna consciousness. He has said, everyone and everything is moving under the control of Krishna. This understanding, this consciousness, is Krishna consciousness. With this sentence, he ended, so to say, his earthly pastime. I mean, he said a few more things, but it's one of the last and very, very profound statements. And I believe, just like when the moon comes into the dark night and sheds light so that we can see the chimney and the trees and the city and so on, also this understanding, this moon-like understanding of Krishna being there in the heart of all living entities and directing the wanderings of all, and also Krishna being there in the material energy and directing the stream of the material energy to flow this way or that way, this understanding will make us very quickly into very good devotees. This morning Pankajangri Prabhu gave a very nice lecture, and one devotee asked him, how can I control my mind? Pankajangi Prabhu answered something which I found extremely profound, and I would like to repeat it. He said, think in each situation in which you are, what is it that Krishna would like me to do now? It's a wonderful formula, isn't it? When the mind goes this way or that way, feels either acceptance or rejection of a situation, come down from this platform and just think about this. What would Krishna like me to do? And the moment you ask this question, oh my dear Lord Krishna, you are in my heart and everything moves under your control, I'm actually willing to let go of my plans. I would like to do what you wish me to do. At that time, Krishna will show you your next step in your life. I would like to end whatever little we explained today, and then open the forum for questions by reading to you the next verse. Krishna speaks in 1861 about the presence of the super soul, and then he speaks in the following verse, the next verse, about the duty of someone or the reaction of someone who understands the super soul, that the super soul or Krishna in the heart is working. He says, O scion of Bharata, surrender unto him utterly. By his grace you will attain transcendental peace. Hanumanji, transcendental peace. By his grace you will attain transcendental peace and the supreme eternal abode. It's actually very profound. If you understand Krishna is in the heart directing me, you become peaceful. Everything is all right. And you also, when you surrender to Krishna in the heart, you will attain the spiritual world. One last... I'm sorry, I said I would now stop, but I can't stop before saying this. Once Bhakti Charu Maharaj came to Srila Prabhupada, and there was a picture of the super soul. Super soul standing in the Lord Krishna in the heart with four arms. And Bhakti Charu Maharaj asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, when you meditate about the super soul, do you think about this four-handed form which is present in your heart, you know, with this conch, lotus, club, and chanka? And Prabhupada gave an interesting answer. He said, no. I'm thinking of Krishna, Krishna in the heart. For a devotee of Krishna, the super soul is actually Krishna. Krishna is in that particular, is in the heart, and directs the devotee from the heart. I found this very, very nice to hear. Obviously, the super soul is Krishna. You know, the Vishnu form is Krishna. But for those who make their goal in life, wonderful Krishna, it is Krishna will reveal himself more profoundly than those who are not so much fixed on Krishna as being God. Hare Krishna. I would like to end now and see if you have any questions. I hope it's not too cold for you. Hanuman, is it alright for you? Otherwise I would give someone my chat. Thank you. Sorry. Bhakti Granth Prabhu has a question. Whom of the two would you like to answer the question, or anyone?
I would like to ask first, and maybe Pankajangri Prabhu can tell something.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the point you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to ask you, Maharaj. I mean, the question may sound challenging, but it's not in that mood. It's in the mood that I would like. wanted to understand something better. When you were saying that how you felt today when your tooth fell out, you were thinking about Krishna and how the suffering is now built on, and that you can concentrate more on devotional service when your death is now, obviously the days are finished.
Yeah.
And I would like to ask you how to understand properly that Krishna is giving suffering for advanced devotees who take so much responsibilities for us and to take care of our spiritual lives. We can see now what is the situation of Bhaktirtha Maharaj. We also know what you went through last period of time. And I don't know, is it that Krishna wants to teach us how the great devotees are, how we said, don't give up the devotional service under any circumstances, and they even, how we said, pay more attention to devotional service and they show up more and more good qualities. Is this the reason, or how we can understand it properly?
Actually, when I talked with Bhaktirtha Maharaj on the phone just before coming to the summer camp, Maharaj did not seem to suffer. He was in a very good mood, very reflective, and he thought really it was a blessing of Krishna. It was a very nice thing. And see, what apparently looks like suffering in the life of a devotee is really not suffering. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives an penetrating example. I read it in a purport of Chaitanya Bhagavat, where he compares the suffering with of a devotee with the Falgu River. There is a Falgu River in India, which looks, when you look at it, it looks like sand. But underneath the sand, there is a current of water. So if you look at the desert, if you look at the Falgu River, for you, it looks like a desert. But somehow underneath, the water is flowing. It's not a desert, but it is a water. So suffering may look like suffering in a devotee's life. But when that devotee is Krishna conscious, then it's really not suffering. I remember there was a picture taken of Srila Prabhupada which appeared in every back of every publication. And after some time, the picture did not appear any longer there. It was exchanged for another picture. So Prabhupada asked, "Where is that picture?" And the editor said, "No, we have replaced it because you look so much suffering there." Now when you look at the picture, yes, they said it in respectful ways. And now when you look at the picture and you hear this description, my first reaction was, also, maybe Prabhupada is not unwell. Here it might be after the heart attack. This picture might have been taken, and his face looks a little swollen, so to say. And Prabhupada said, looked at the picture. "No, I like this picture because this was taken when I was in ecstasy." Apparently, Prabhupada was in a very ecstatic condition of mind. And during that time a picture was taken, and we know he underwent a heart, what was it, yesterday or the day before yesterday, Jai Pataka Maharaj said there was a stroke, I believe, something like a heart attack, or was it, he was paralyzed up till here. That's a heart stroke or whatever it is, it's something intense, but for Prabhupada was in ecstatic Krishna consciousness. So yes, for us it looks that our Bhaktirtha Maharaj is in misery, and our perspective should be, hopefully this goes over and hopefully he finds the right treatment, and I hear he eats now a special diet which will be good for the cells, so that good cells are built up in the body, and so on. And we should think as disciples, maybe I did something wrong now, I should really become very sincere. Mm-hmm. This is one perspective. Another perspective on suffering is that a devotee, and I certainly take it like this in my life, these are reactions to offenses. I was a long time not thinking about this until I read in Chaitanya Bhagavatam how Haridas Thakur came to Shantipur after he had been caned. You know the what is caned?
Whipped.
Yeah. He came to Shantipur, and the Brahmanas asked him, how is it possible you're such a devotee that Krishna tolerated that so much pain is inflicted upon you? I mean, how is it possible? Haridas Thakur said, it was because of my offenses against the holy name. Now, should we accept it like this, that Haridas is a great offender? No. But I think we should, we will never accept the subjective viewpoint of a devotee and think that this is exactly, yes. No, we will. But we can immediately learn for ourselves, maybe it is because of our offenses. I know I have a very sharp tongue. I say sometimes wrong things about devotees and I'm frustrated, and this is not good. Krishna doesn't like this, so it certainly comes from there. This is how the devotee will see it. Now, if you ask Bhakti Teda Maharaj, he will give also some explanation how he is a great sinner, but we can't see it like this. We see it more that this is apparent suffering only. It looks like this. This is something which Krishna does to embrace his devotee, to take him back to him, or to bring him closer to him. This is my understanding, but maybe Pankajangri Prabhu has more new aspects to this or other aspects. Would you like to say, or would you like to take another question?
Well, how do you view that? How do you view it when the devotee gets sick?
Could you repeat your question, or would you like to take another question? Because I can see there were other questions also, and if we talk so long on one question, Gogadara. But let Pankajangri now please answer. Mm-hmm. Good.
We thought that we have to be everybody the same, or how to really respect other people's personality is one still condition.
In the Bhagavad Gita, the advice is I can't remember. Anyway, the learned brahmana sees the So he sees everyone as equal because he sees the same person. He may have a dog's body or a Brahmin's body or in between elephant, but you're seeing that person, that dog is just misused his independence severely. The Brahmana, he didn't misuse his independence so much. He's awarded, you know, he's got a better body, it's a better situation actually, material, relatively speaking. So everyone is different in the material world. Everyone is different. And the better we accept people as they are, it seems a nice policy to do, accept them as they are. especially when you're dealing with, you know, in our line, is because what's the use of pointing out the fault or criticizing someone who is actually taken to the practice of Krishna consciousness, because in due course of time it'll all go anyway. And this is your position, but then it should be done in a proper way according to the Vaishnava etiquette. We should learn the proper behavior, but of course we should first examine ourselves, and that is why the association of pure devotees is essential for us. We realize we're not what we thought we were, you know, not as special as we thought we were, and the more the greater the devotee that we speak to, the greater the purity there, then the more revelation we get about ourselves, how fallen we really are, how far we have to go. So that will develop the humility. It's that association. Of course we associate with the great devotees through their books, Srila Prabhupada, Rupa Goswami and all the acharyas. But also the living examples which are with us nowadays, we should try to get their association also. So we can see by their example, then we realize, we got a long way to go. So it's not like, you know, you make a clone of yourself, you're actually making a clown of yourself. We were speaking the other day, the jiva makes an ass of himself. But that's a problem. We have this feeling about ourselves that we are special. And it doesn't go away until we're self-realized. Then it goes half away. So, we still got some work to do. But so accept people as they are. The Prabhupada was very expert in this field. He would speak to people, and then he would sometimes just speak about a material matter. Yeah. One old man, he's speaking about the garden, flowers. You know, he's a gardener. He's talking about. And then, just when, at the right time, he says something, just Prabhupada can connect it. So Prabhupada says, like that. You like this, and then you'll connect it with Krishna consciousness, which is a very simple thing to do. Because if you just say one word, you can start talking about from that word and bring it into Krishna consciousness immediately. Right? We could do that if you had a game like that. You say some word, and then say, add on that word, from that word, and make a Krishna conscious statement. This is easy to do. So Prabhupada was expert at this, and this is the expertise of the preacher, to start off on their level, and then gradually bring them into Krishna consciousness. So as Prabhupada would say, you see the spark, and then you find that spark, then you start the fan. What interest do they have? Find their interest, and then dovetail that with Krishna consciousness, because that will make them more interested. It's something I like to do, it's something they'd like to do, and now they can actually dovetail it in Krishna consciousness, not that they have to give it up, because the things they like to do, it means they're attached to them. So like that, Prabhupada was very expert at that, and he would, as soon as you saw that spark, he would fan it and make it go like that. But you have to accept people as they are anyway. That's a
as policy. And it's a very gradual process that we see for ourselves. It's a very gradual process. The subtle body changes, but the gross desires and the likes and dislikes, takes time for them to actually change. They do change, but it takes time. Every moment you're changing. Every moment. It's so subtle you don't realize it. But after a period of time, just like when your hair is growing or your nails are growing all the time, but you can't perceive it. Right? But after 2 weeks, you'll perceive your nails have actually grown. But you can't, at the moment by moment, you can't perceive how that they're actually growing. So like that, when you practice Krishna consciousness, you don't perceive any change. It's an imperceptible change that's going on. But if you want to see it, a good way is like if you go back to the place. If you've practiced for some time and you go back to the place where you come from and the surroundings that you came from as a karmic, then you think, wow, I was like this. And then you realize how much you've actually changed. But it seems like it's a very gradual thing. Gradual process. So whatever they are, Krishna consciousness is universal. Anyone can take part in Krishna consciousness, even the animals. So even people, whatever they got, whatever their likes are, whatever their interests are, we can just do it like that, cultivate like that. Rather to encourage than to cut, you know. Say you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. Rather, what they like, you could do it like this way and connect it with Krishna. That would be better. Yeah. So first work on your own faults. So you also have a long way to go. How can you start to tell other people what to do? And then when you do, there's also a way to do that. So we have to learn the proper etiquette. The truth must be palatable when it's spoken. Hare Krishna.
Yes. Anna, huh? Mm-hmm.
Our nature is staying as it is, and is this nature only material nature, that character of ours, or it has some connection with our spiritual personality? Because some devotees have heard that what we have now as a character is something that we have as a spiritual person in this life. Is there any connection, or is it so different that we don't know what is our spiritual personality and characteristics?
No, because you can't say that there's any connection with the conditional nature and your spiritual nature, except that it's you who are spiritual who is doing all the experiencing. But in the conditional nature means you're under illusion. You're experiencing. You're thinking this is good and bad, and this is happiness and distress. That's actually illusion. Because the spirit soul, there's no happiness, there's no distress, there's no the duality for the spirit soul. So this is why this Maya, or the conditioned state, means that you think you're the doer. You forget that Krishna's doing everything. You become the doer, therefore you get the result. If you're doing it for yourself, then the result comes to you. Yeah. If you're doing it for Krishna, the result goes to Krishna. So that's the art of Krishna consciousness. Then if there's no result, then there's no need to take birth again. But we don't know what the spiritual world is. We don't know who we are. Of course, you have a spiritual sentiment, and you like to serve Krishna in a particular way. But it's just sentiment. It may be your actual rasa, but it may be sentiment. I mean, you won't know. If it's any reality there until you come to that platform, until it's revealed to you. But you do have like Krishna in a particular way, and she likes Krishna in a particular way, and everyone has a favorite way of loving Krishna or liking Krishna. Some aspect of Krishna, some form of Krishna, is very attractive to us. But this may be due to our conditional nature. The lady puts, you're dressing Krishna, or the pujari is dressing, waking Krishna up in the morning and feeding him. putting night clothes on and putting to bed at night and tucking him in, and they think they're in Vatsala Bhav. It's like Vatsala Bhav. You're like a father then, mother or father. Sit in the tree, Krishna, like a baby sometimes. But it's nothing to do with your actual sarup. You may be in Vatsala Bhav. You may be. It's possible. But this is... I can tell you on that platform, it's just, it's more or less sentiment. It's nice, but it may not be real, you see. You may be someone else in the spiritual world. So that will be gradually revealed to you. So they're different. They're different. Is that right?
Krishna.
Any other question, or should we look at the wristwatch again?